7 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. Here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Perfect timing. I'm looking up at the TV. Game's getting ready to begin. K-Ray and Eddie Johnson are talking about Mikal Bridges. 34 points, 12 of 18 from the floor, 6 of 8 from the three-point line. One gigantic ice bath after the game Saturday night against Indiana. And it is Mikal Bridges and, to a lesser extent, Cam Johnson, who have gotten a lion's share of attention for the Suns the last couple of days, Gambo, including ESPN in doing their power rankings, suggesting that Mikal Bridges might be the front runner for most improved player in the NBA this year already, 10 games into the season. Not bad.
Yeah, and he's only going to get better. I mean, he has a chance to really, you know, combine with Book and DA and be a big three for the Phoenix Suns. I mean, they may not have to go get one. They may have one that's just going to develop. I'm looking forward to this game. I mean, that is going to be some chore trying to cover, you know, Bradley Beal. And, you know, you'll see a few different guys switch off on him. I don't think it'll be just one guy. You know, Chris Paul can guard him a little bit, and then they'll put Mikal on him, and they'll just switch on and off because he's capable of beating you by himself. He's just that good. But Mikal's development is just, ever since they drafted him and the way they got him, he has been nothing short of spectacular. Remember, they had four wings at one point, and they absolutely made the right decision on who they were going to keep, right? Because they had T.J. Warren and Josh Jackson, and they had, you know, Cam, and they had Mikal, and you had to make a decision, right? You couldn't keep all these wings, and they had to get rid of two of them, and they ended up getting rid of T.J. Warren, and they ended up getting rid of Josh Jackson. They made the right call in the guys that they decided to keep.
They did, and I'll tell you what, somebody who is a big fan of Mikal Bridges is the guy who shares the starting lineup with him, and that is Chris Paul. This is, I mean, for a guy who's been around the league as long as he has, and I'm not trying to make him sound old, but for a guy who's been around as long as he has, for Chris Paul to say this about Mikal Bridges really says something.
Been around a lot of guys in this league over the years, and he's one of the best guys I think I've ever been around. So to see him do well and to see his game blossoming the way it is nice because he deserves it.
Now, he didn't say best players. He did say one of the best guys I've ever been around, which I think, you know, we saw that ice shower, that ice bucket shower that he got after the game on Saturday in Indianapolis. And I think he's a very popular guy within his team. But Chris went on to say, look, Mikal Bridges is just a real fun guy to be around.
Aside from Kale, like, taking, you know, pretty much the toughest defensive assignment night in and night out, he can hoop. He's nice, but then he's slick, man. You got to watch him. You got to watch him. He's real slick with his tongue, real, but a fun guy, like a very fun guy to be around. And he just got a great spirit around him. I mean, about him, a great spirit about him. He works, he puts the work in. So, you know, he's one of those guys that when I kick it to him and, you know, he hits a shot, like I feel like I made it.
Yeah. I'm so happy for him that he made it. I feel like I made it. That's how much I like Mikal Bridges. That says a lot to me, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those, he just doesn't have an ego, right? I mean, he played college basketball for 3 years. He won two championships. He had so many accolades. He came out, he got drafted, was 11th overall, and he is just consistent. He's just such a consistent player. I was saying earlier to you, I just don't know that there's really any weakness in his game. He shoots the three really well. He defends as good as anybody in the league. He's got a 7'2 wingspan, so he's lengthy. He can guard the one, the two, the three, the four. So he gives you that versatility. So he's versatile. He's very good offensively, and he's not like Cam Johnson. He's a lot more of a shooter. Sure, he's taking the ball to the rack a lot more, but he's more of a shooter. Mikal drives and scores. He dunks. He blocks shots. He can rebound. He passes well. I mean, he just, I don't know that there's a weakness to his game. He does everything really well.
I mean, obviously he was a much better defender when he came into the league than he was an offensive player. So he's worked very, very hard on that part of his game. I do think his three-point shot has really come around since the end of last year to this year. I think his ability to get to the rim has really come around. And there were a couple of drives against the Pacers where he just seamlessly knifed through the defense to get to the rim the way he did. And if that's who he's going to be offensively, he's going to be very, very difficult to deal with, to the point where our friends over at Bright Side of the Sun, and this is interesting, and the point that they made basically in writing this is, look, Booker, You kind of know what you're going to get out of Devin Booker. Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton, you kind of know what you're going to get out of those three guys every single night. But their whole point...
I agree with DA.
You don't?
No, I have no idea what you're going to get from him every night. I mean, right now, I think this year it's been more of a, I'm going to get you 10 to 12 points, I'm going to get you 12 rebounds. Last year, you had no idea. I mean, he could give you 10 points or he can give you 25. I mean, you just weren't sure.
I guess you're right. It's just that as a minimum, they kind of said as a minimum, you know you're going to get at least 10 points and 10 rebounds out of DeAndre Ayton, right? I mean, I feel good that even if he has a lousy game, he's going to give you 10 points and 10 rebounds at the bare minimum, right? Agree?
Yeah. I mean, he's a solid rebounder. I mean, he's definitely a solid rebounder. The points haven't come for him this year like you would expect, but he's a solid rebounder.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but okay. So that aside, when it comes to Mikal Bridges, the three games where he's had 0 to 9 points, they're 0-3. The rest of the time, they're undefeated. They're 7-0. If he scores at least 10 points, they have not lost a game. And Cam Johnson isn't all that different. When he scores 0 to 9 points, the Suns are 1-2. When he scores more than 10, they're 6-1 on the season. They seem to go, anyway, as those two guys go. Right.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, it really is when you think about it. I like numbers like that, right? I'm not an analytics guy, but that's pretty simple. I mean, if these guys aren't scoring points, then this team's not winning. And if they're scoring their points, then they're winning. Although I do think with the DA thing, this could be the game, right? I mean, Robin Lopez, slower center. Like, if we're looking for a breakout game offensively from DeAndre, like, this could be it. It's possible this is the game.
Yeah, we keep waiting and watching and hoping, and there were a couple of moments against the he got to a really slow start offensively against the Pacers, and it took him a long while to get into the flow of that game, but maybe tonight is the night where we see a big kind of breakout moment. I mean, it's funny to think of all of these stars on the Phoenix Suns roster, the first guy to have a game in which he scored 30 points. It was Mikal Bridges. It wasn't Devin Booker. It wasn't Chris Paul. It wasn't DeAndre Ayton. Mikal Bridges had the Phoenix Suns' first 30-point game of the 2021 NBA season, which I don't know if anybody would have guessed that. Now, before we go to a break, something I want to clear this up, because I don't know if Jordan knows this. Gambo, you and I talked about this on Friday when Jordan was gone. We weren't sure if we were going to have Jordan back, because he's about to go on paternity leave.
Hey.
Jordan, Gambo, what are we going to do about... Wait, who do the Suns play tonight?
I don't do it
Washington
without him.
Wizards. And what does it mean for the Washington Wizards? What are we going to do about this, you two? What's the solution here?
I just like Gambo said, I don't do it without Gambo. So
you just don't do it.
Yeah. I don't know how we'll... I mean...
I think you
so
know.
You're ditching the recording idea? Because, Jordan, they were trying to get you to pre-record.
Not me. I don't...
Oh, I was.
Not me.
I was. I'll cop to that. That was totally me.
They were giving you work while you're on paternity leave to sum
that's
it up.
Actually possible. That's feasible. That might be a good compromise. Well, but the last time I recorded one, you guys didn't care for it. I added, it's hard to do it without Gambo's setup, and I added too much of like a sing-songy to it.
So well, what you're saying is Gambo needs to record himself, and you can
hold
then
on.
Go
let me let
that.
Me look at the schedule here for a second. Just give me a. You're going to be out starting. What are we thinking? Thursday.
Yes.
Thursday. And what do we? What do you think? Like 2 weeks?
Yeah. For the first stint.
For the first. Okay.
There'll
this
be
is the paternity leave you're going
stints,
on
yeah.
because.
All right.
You're,
so they
have
play Monday. They play today. We got it in. They play Wednesday. So we would miss Friday, Saturday. No Saturday. So we'd miss Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So how many games are Friday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday? That's four. And then Wednesday, Thursday, six. So if you came back for February 1st, we would miss six games.
The Suns might be 0-6 at that point.
They need us.
They do.
They need us.
I might look into the record avenue and just record those six games before I actually take off.
So all you need to
I think
record.
We should do a Twitter poll on it tomorrow and let the listeners decide.
That's a good idea.
Maybe Sarah could pick
we
up. Well, no.
Decide.
I was going to say it's.
Nope.
I was going to say maybe Sarah could step in, but no, it's Gambo and myself. Yeah.
Nope. It's Gambo and Jordan.
I mean, nobody
should
else
Jordan
it.
Record his bad news for the opponent, or should we just not do it? until he gets back.
I can tell you right now, and I think Sarah will back me on this one. If that's the poll question tomorrow, it will be 93% Jordan should record it.
I don't know.
If the option is
live
Jordan
or Memorex,
records it,
man.
Or
some
we
people,
skip
it's
it.
Not live. It's not real. You know, it's just not.
Yeah. I think Burnsy's onto it, though. I think our listeners will insist that Jordan records.
So that's doable.
Yeah. So you just see bad news for the Warriors. Bad news for the Grizzlies. Bad news for the Rockets. Bad news for the Nuggets. Bad news for the Thunder. Bad news. And the Warriors, we can play twice because you've already done it.
That's true.
But we just need you to record six. That's a five recordings. That's it. Five recordings on your way out the door. Then you can go have a baby in peace and we'll leave you alone.
I'll just have to really focus when I'm recording those because, like I said, I think it was a Clippers game last year and I recorded it and it just didn't have that same magnitude to it.
Gambo. Right. It was very sing-songy. Yeah,
Gambo,
I do remember that.
You should send a voice memo to Jordan. You should text him a voice memo of you doing your thing. So that he has a reference.
What does that mean for the Clippers? Yeah. And then he can play that for himself so he can set himself up. Yeah,
properly riled up.
I know how to send a voice memo.
Have your wife figure it out for you.
I have no idea how to send a voice memo.
Chelsea knows. Chelsea knows how to send a voice memo. Yeah, yeah. By the way, game's underway. You can hear it on ESPN 620. But I encourage you to know that we will keep you updated completely on this game. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, now that we've solved that problem. For the first time in 25 years. I think we saw that.
Solve it
have a feeling. We'll see what the poll question says.
I just plan on it.
A lot of people are like, well, if it's not real, I don't know if I want it. We'll see. We'll see what the poll question says. I'm guessing that the answer to that question is going to be in the 90th percentile. I think people are going to want it because they're going to miss it for the first time in 25 years. But we'll see. There was a playoff win for the Buffalo Bills. Is their playoff run just starting? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. The young guard in the AFC taking over. The average age of the quarterback that's still remaining in the AFC today. 24 years, 344 days. So basically 25 years old. And when you look at the matches that are left in the AFC playoffs now, yeah, it stands to reason. Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, youth has been served in the AFC, and
or
youth
rank
was served
for me.
This weekend.
Rank it for me. Who would you rather? Who's your number one, two, and three?
Of those four guys?
Yeah. Who's your number one?
Mahomes, Allen, Lamar.
Take Mahomes
Baker.
Out to the draft class.
Okay. Oh, of that draft class?
Yeah.
Allen, Lamar, Baker, and
I think
then
I would go
Darnold
that same route. I think I would go Rosen. Allen 1, Lamar 2, Baker 3.
Yeah. Josh
but
Allen.
I'd be happy with any of them. I mean, right now.
Sure.
They look like
at this point, I take any of them. They're three very good young quarterbacks. It's the first time three first rounders from the same draft have all made the divisional round of the playoffs since like 2008 when it was Rivers and Eli Manning and Big Ben. So, I mean, you're talking about that's a pretty weighty comparison right there. And while we've already talked a little bit about Baker and the Pittsburgh Steelers, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, both posting big wins, and both, in a way, getting kind of monkeys off their back. For Lamar, it was more of a personal thing. He was 0-2 in the playoffs. He was 0-6 when trailing by double digits. Both of those got reversed with their win over the Tennessee Titans. For Josh Allen, it was kind of getting the bad taste out of his mouth from last year's playoffs, and it was that organization in general that had not won a playoff game since 1995. All of that kind of got, for lack of a better word, Gambo, fixed this weekend in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah, no, the Bills, so many quarterbacks since Jim Kelly left, so many, and now they finally got one. I mean, he became the youngest quarterback in NFL history to throw for 300 yards and complete 70% of his passes in a playoff game. He was that good, 26 out of 35, 324 yards, two touchdowns, and he can run. I mean, all of these guys can run a little bit, right? I mean, Allen can run, Mahomes can run, Mayfield can run, Lamar can run, You know, here Kyler can run. You're seeing all these quarterbacks with the ability to run. Look at that guy Henneke with the Washington. He can run. Wolford with the Rams. He can run. So I've never seen this many running quarterbacks in the NFL. Guys that can really hurt you both ways. And Allen, yeah, 54 more yards and he had a touchdown on the ground. He is he's really some. The knock on him when he came out was, yeah, he just didn't, you know, went to Wyoming. Like, what quarterbacks go to Wyoming? I mean, can anybody even name a football player that went to Wyoming besides Josh Allen?
Jordan probably can.
I mean, it's just like, maybe that's not. What I'm saying. Nobody thinks of Wyoming as, so the competition level was, you know, and Jordan can't think of anybody because nobody can. I mean, name a receiver that came out of Wyoming. Yeah, Wyoming players in the NFL or whatever it is. You know, that was the knock. He didn't have any competition. How's he going to fare in the NFL? It was a knock on him, but he's great. Like, he's a really good young quarterback. Can make his reads, go through his progressions, find open guys. I mean, I like him. You know, Mayfield looks like he's really turned the corner after, you know, a down year last year. I've always liked Lamar. Some people don't, but I do. I like Lamar. I think he's dynamic. He's not... You know, he's different than the other guys. He's just different. That doesn't mean he's not good. He's a very good quarterback.
No, and his game, there's still plenty of room to grow. There's still plenty of room for his game to evolve. But I think that's what I like about Josh Allen so much is that you think about this time a year ago, the questions that existed about Josh Allen and his game. Was he accurate enough? Would he complete a high enough percentage of balls to wide receivers? Now, a lot of this obviously was helped by getting a guy like Stephon Diggs. But go back and look at the numbers between Josh Allen a year ago and Josh Allen now. It's like he's a different guy. Watching him, it's like you're watching a different guy. He's doing everything well right now. He's throwing the ball down the field with accuracy. He's checking it down smartly. He was still the leading rusher for the Bills over the weekend, so we still got that, like you say, that mobility that seems to be so very important in today's NFL. I just think the way his game has grown, I'll tell you this right now, of all these job vacancies in the NFL, that offensive coordinator for the Bills, Dabble, and what he's been able to do with Allen so far, you know, over these last couple of years, I'd be shocked if he doesn't get one of these head coaching jobs because, man, he's taken Josh Allen, who was admittedly a project at the quarterback position, and turned him into what looks like very much a finished product in today's NFL. It's very impressive what he's
done. Listen, I think more, and he's done a good job, but more than anything, going to get Stephon Diggs and what they gave up, right? They gave up a first, a fifth, and a sixth in last year's draft. They gave up a fourth this year. And that first round pick, by the way, ended up becoming Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver out of LSU, who was the best rookie, maybe the best rookie in the league. Guy had 1,400 yards receiving. So, that, you know, they gave up a pick that became Justin Jefferson, but they got a proven guy in Stephon Diggs who was great. And there was no assurances they were going to get Jefferson if they would have held on to the pick. They didn't know. But I think getting Diggs was, I mean, you know, that was, I mean, two great wide receivers got moved, DeAndre Hopkins and Diggs. But look at what Diggs has meant to Josh Allen.
And, of course, in the other AFC game, not the Cleveland game, but in the Ravens game, they beat the Titans 20-13. Lamar Jackson, his first postseason win, as I mentioned. Lamar Jackson also his first win when trailing in a game by double digits. He was 0-6 in situations like that so far in his career. And that's the thing that you know, everybody wants to make it like Lamar Jackson has just gotten this gigantic monkey off his back. Man, he's 24 years old. He's so young. What he did on Saturday or Sunday was inevitable. He was going to do it one of these days, sooner or later. I'm not sure. But he finally, and now we can finally stop talking about this as some sort of defining narrative of Lamar Jackson. He's not the guy who can't win the big game. He had two tries. He failed both times. He got the win. We can now move on from that conversation, I think.
And he was, I mean, that touchdown run, that 48-yard touchdown run, that was unreal. I mean, that was such a great run. And I don't know that anybody else can do that besides him. because he is the best runner out of the group by far. But his passing was pretty good too. But you got to, I mean, as much as we talk about Lamar, man, you got to give credit to that defense. They put eight guys in the box and they said, we're going to stop Derrick Henry, and if you want to beat us, you're going to have to do it with the passing game, and they weren't able to do it. So great job by that defense stopping Derrick Henry.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, so while the remaining AFC playoff field is full of young quarterbacks, the NFC will now feature a matchup of two over 40 signal callers. Not old in the real world, but certainly old in the NFL. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Average age of the four remaining AFC quarterbacks, 25 years. Average age of the four remaining NFC quarterbacks, 37 years. And not that that's old, but as far as NFL quarterbacks go, it kind of is. You know,
it's old.
It's unusual to see a Tom Brady-Drew Brees matchup in the second round of the postseason, given that they're basically 1-2 in about every measurable stat that we know about when it comes to ranking quarterbacks in the history of the league. But that's what we're going to get, because the Bucs beat Washington on Saturday night, and because the Saints beat the Bears on Sunday afternoon. Which game you want to start with, Gambo?
Let's start with Brady versus Brees. It's crazy. We have never had a Brady versus Brees playoff matchup, ever. This will be the first time. They've never played each other.
Well, and the only time they would have was the Super Bowl, right? For the most part.
Well,
being
Brees,
in different conferences.
Brees was in San Diego for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, it was a while ago, but yeah, I mean,
he was 5-6 years in San Diego. What was Brady's first year in the league?
Well, also, wouldn't they have played each other every 4 years as you rotate through the opposite division?
But in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He said the playoffs. Yeah, he said the playoffs.
Brady
got there in, what, 99? 2000? Right?
2000, he got there. Yeah, so Brees was the quarterback. Brees was the quarterback. Brees was in San Diego 2001, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So that was, I mean, those years, they didn't play each other those years. And obviously, they never met in the Super Bowl. And both had great teams. New Orleans has had great teams. You know, and they just, whatever. They haven't played each other. These guys have been in the league forever, and they haven't played each other in a playoff game.
Yeah, they've played each other this year, and boy, I'd say that's going to be an angle that's going to get just beat into the ground all week long. You know, how hard is it to beat a team three times in 1 year? Because the Saints have won both the games this year. Remember, the Saints absolutely clobbered the Bucs in one of those games, 38-3.
Yeah, and they're going to do it again.
And they're probably, well, if the Bucs play like they played against Washington, I mean, that was good enough to beat Washington. Like you said earlier, I don't think that's good enough to beat the New Orleans Saints. I mean, the Bucs were fine on Saturday night. They're going to need to be a whole lot crisper than that if they're going to beat the Saints in the playoffs this weekend.
They're going to have to play a lot better, right? There were good things that they did, but that Washington team should have never been in the playoffs. I mean, that was not a good football team, and they hung around. It was a two-point game in the fourth quarter. Now, Evans played well, and Leonard Fournette came in and played well, and Brady threw for a lot of yards, but they should have put that team away and buried them, and they didn't do it. They play like that against New Orleans, they very likely get beat. Now, New Orleans didn't light it up against Chicago, but Chicago is known to have a pretty good defense. But New Orleans' defense completely shut down, and I don't know if you give any credit for this, they completely shut down Mitch Trubisky and the Bears.
I don't want to give him that much credit either. But Tom Brady, who did author Tampa Bay's first postseason win since the Super Bowl in the 2002 season, so it's been a long time there too, said, hey, just because we win doesn't mean we're satisfied.
We win 100-0, and it's going to be the same result in the end. So, you know, you'd love to play great every game. You know, I think it's good to win in advance, and, you know, if we don't play well next week, we're not going to be happy.
I did like how the Bucs kept answering Washington. Every time Washington would get a little bit closer in that game, would make a play and make it kind of interesting in that game, the Bucs typically responded every single time. I'll give Washington credit. They played real hard. Taylor Heinicke was, in many ways, I wouldn't call him the story of the first weekend. That would be a little hyperbole, but he certainly played awfully well, much better than anybody thought he was going to. And I thought he was one of the main stories of the weekend, was how well he and Washington hung against Tampa Bay. I wasn't expecting that.
No. And that kid, I mean, he won a lot of people over, and they kept raving about just how tough he is and how hard he was playing. And he did. He absolutely, he was fantastic. I mean, he kept them in the game, and he was out of the league. I mean, those stories are great. I mean, he's out of the league for 2 years. He was on one of those XFL teams and didn't even play. He was like the backup. He didn't even play. But they kind of knew him a little bit from Minnesota, and they knew the system. And it was like, okay, so they brought him in. He gets an opportunity to play. Because they didn't want to put Alex Smith out there. He was just, not mobile enough. And that kid just, he played his ass off. And, and for him, it's just, I even tweeted out, man, it looks like Washington may have a quarterback. Now, I don't, maybe at least a backup, right? If I'm them, I try to keep him as a backup in this league. Because he made so many big throws, in that game. He made a lot of big throws. And then that, his ability to run and everything. And, just down the stretch, he finally got sacked at the end, and that's how they won the game. It really came down to that, those last plays.
Ron Rivera very proud of how Heinicke played in that game.
It was gutsy. It really was. And it's one of those things.
Oh.
It was gutsy. It really was. And it's one of those things that, a guy like him who works hard at what he does, he's create an opportunity for himself, and we'll see what happens. But I'm just very, very proud of what he did, coming out and competing the way he did and helping us to get where we are today.
On the other side of the equation, the New Orleans Saints against the Chicago Bears, and as we were talking about all six of these matchups on Friday, Gambo and I, we both kind of agreed this was the one game where if you were going to handpick a game to go run to the grocery store, or go down to Home Depot and buy that tool that you didn't get for Christmas, or run that errand that needed to be run, the Saints-Bears game was probably the game for you to do it during. And true to form, there was not a whole lot that game had to offer. The Bears just, other than the drop in the end zone and how that might have affected the early portion of that game, man, it just didn't look like the Bears had much of anything to offer in that game against the Saints. They didn't even look competitive in that game against New Orleans.
Although Anthony Miller did throw another punch, right?
Yes, he did. We do have that. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, they just, they got to, look, kept thinking, man, that should be the Cardinals, right? I mean, did that thought cross your mind as you're watching that game? Like, this should be the Cardinals?
Yep.
I don't know how they would play, but the Bears put up no fight in that game, and Trubisky's no good. And, they got to figure out what they're going to do at the quarterback spot. Trubisky's not their guy. Foles is not their guy. They're talking about, is the era over for Mitchell Trubisky in Chicago? He's been there long enough. I mean, you should have a good idea whether he's your guy or not. Tony Romo on the broadcast, before a commercial break, he was like, well, is he going to come back to Chicago? I'll give you my information next. And he was like, well, if they can find a better quarterback, then they'll move on. But if they can't, they'll keep him. Okay. I mean, you just got to decide if he's the guy or if he's not the guy. And if they don't think he's the guy, then you move on and you try different quarterbacks.
I have to think. I mean, look, Chicago got in. They earned it. I'm not trying to be sour grapes guy here. I'm really not. I got to think if the Arizona Cardinals were in that spot, they would have played a tougher game against the Saints than the Bears. I have to think.
Based on the way they played against San Francisco and the Rams, I can't. I mean, against C.J. Beathard and Johnny Walford, I don't know. I mean, I would hope so. You would hope so, right? But, man, they had two opportunities to win some games, and they just, they flopped down the stretch because they didn't play good.
Yeah, you're right. That's just kind of local pride sort of swelling up. And, our team would have done better than that. I don't know if they would have. I just know that the Bears, and maybe, somebody more on the outside would look at the Cardinals and say, well, the Cardinals weren't very good either. I just didn't think the Bears were a very good football team. I didn't think the Bears were, and certainly not with Mitchell Trubisky as their quarterback. Now, again, the drop, how much that changed things. But you look at just the sheer domination the Saints defense was putting on the Bears up until that last drive, up until the very end of the game, with the one-handed touchdown catch that was, the walk-off touchdown catch as Jimmy Graham ran out of the tunnel on his way out of the building. The Bears couldn't do anything offensively. So now it sets it up. Drew Brees, Tom Brady. There was a report over the weekend that this is it for Drew Brees. That he hasn't said as much, but apparently everybody around him knows he is done after this season. He will retire after this season. So this is his last hurrah. I don't know if this Saints team is good enough to win him one on his way out the door. Maybe they're good enough to get him there on his way out the door to the Super Bowl. I don't know if it's good enough to win him one on his way out the door.
Take out Kansas City and Green Bay. Who's got the best chance?
Buffalo.
I like New Orleans.
I
think it's Green Bay, Kansas City, and those teams had a week off, and I think that's huge when nobody else did. But if I was going to pick anybody, like, I like the Ravens over the Bills this week. So who has the best chance of being?
Ooh.
Yeah, I do. I mean, that game's in Buffalo, right? I like the Ravens.
I think that game is
that's a great game.
That's a bold pick by you, because that's going to be a really tough game to call. That is the premier game of this weekend, I think, right? If you're looking at point spreads, that's the premier game of the weekend. The dud is probably the Packers and the Rams. The other ones all look pretty good. Chiefs-Browns will be really interesting with Mahomes versus Mayfield. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then, of course, Breeze versus Brady. But, yeah, I think Ravens-Bills.
Do you give the Rams no chance against Green Bay?
No, I give them, what would you say, a puncher's chance? I give them a puncher's chance. I think they have a chance against Green Bay. I just think that Rodgers is playing at such a high level right now, and that is truly the one true home field advantage in the NFL playoffs because of the weather and how cold it's going to be there. I mean, Kansas City, too, to a certain extent, but I don't give him much of a chance. Do you give him a chance?
You know, I mean, probably a little bit. I'm just looking at the weather. Is that a Saturday or Sunday game?
That's a... I have to look. I don't remember.
Saturday, the low is 32. Sunday, it's 24. So it's an 8-degree difference. So if that's a Sunday game, right now it's supposed to be 8 degrees lower.
Saturday game. It's a Saturday.
So Saturday's the 30. Saturday's low is 32. Sunday is low as 24. So after Saturday in Green Bay, it dips 24, yeah. 22 degrees. So they might catch the last. And that's, I mean, it's still cold, right? That's still cold weather to play in.
Yeah, we'll see how the Rams do in that. When we come back, Ohio State's domination at Clemson caught many by surprise. Can they do it again in tonight's national title game? Plus, a Suns update from our nation's capital. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. I don't think we need the Urban Dictionary to look up any words to describe how the Phoenix Suns are playing so far in the first half against the Washington Wizards. I think we can come up with words on our own.
Yeah.
Hideous.
Bad news for the Suns.
Awful. Oof. Oh, boy. 45-25. They're losing to the Wizards with 6.5 to go in the second quarter.
This whole thing is a travesty and a sham and a mockery. It's a travesty sham mockery.
It's awful.
Yeah, no, they're not playing well. They had 15 points in the first quarter, and Washington had 29. Beal had 13 points in the first quarter. Yeah, they're just not playing very well, and they're 1 of 9 on threes. This is the one thing about the Suns is that they live and die by the three. They take so many that they kind of live and die by it. So, you know, if they're 4 for 9. You know, that's 9 more points. Now it's a, you know, a much closer game. So they're not shooting the ball, and Washington is 5 for 10 from 3-point range. So, you know, that's really the difference in the game right now. And the Suns just not shooting good overall, but 1 of 9 from 3-point range.
Yeah, the Wizards are shooting 52% rounding up. The Suns are shooting 38% from the floor. Yeah, they've taken 29 shots. 9 of them have been from distance. Nobody's really standing out for the Suns. Devin Booker's leading the way with 8 points, but it's an unfocused, sloppy affair so far in which Washington, I mean, look, they can't defend worth a lick, and they're missing Russell Westbrook, and they're missing Thomas Bryant, but they can score. They have guys who can fill it. And so far, the Suns are not taking advantage of how bad the Wizards are defensively. But as we saw on Friday night, Gambo, things can change very quickly. And we'll see if things can change quickly for the Suns.
You know, I don't know if it does. I mean, Bertans just knocked out. I don't know that it does, because the Suns' main defender is on the bench in foul trouble.
Yeah, he's got three.
So Mikal Bridges has three fouls. He only played 8 minutes. He's only played 8 minutes so far, and there's 5 minutes left in the second quarter. He got into foul trouble quickly. He doesn't have a point in the game. Your little stat about, hey, if he scores less than 9, they don't win. He doesn't have any points right now, and he's got three fouls.
Yeah, Booker's already got two, so if he picks up one more, then he's going to have three, and there's still 5.5 minutes to go.
And Beal's about to hit a three-point play here. If he hits this shot, the Suns are down 26. He's going to go to the free throw line. They're down 25 right now. He just hit a jumper over Carter and got fouled. If he hits the free throw, the Suns are down 26. Oof, they're getting buried.
We'll have much more to talk about this tomorrow on our Tuesday edition of the Burns and Gambo show. And maybe, Gambo, we might have a conversation about a basketball team that unfortunately is playing to the level of their competition 11 games into the season.
Oh, my God. They're down 26. DeAndre throws the inbound pass. It gets stolen, and they throw it to Bertans. He knocks down a three. They're now down by 29.
Oh, boy.
The Suns are down by 29 points.
Yep. Much more on this tomorrow.
DeAndre Ayton's a minus 22. Booker's a minus 24. Crowder's a minus 20. They're getting worked, Bernsie.
Yeah. Look, if they're going to get points at the rim, right, if they're taking too many threes, man, that's a DeAndre Ayton. Take the ball to the rim. Go to the rim. Suns need to look for him at the rim. I mean, it might be too late in this game, given they're down 29 and there's still half the game to go. But they're shooting way too many threes, way too much perimeter. They're not taking it to the rim enough. And that, to me, is kind of a DeAndre Ayton thing. This game can be heard. Suns game can be heard on ESPN 620. As soon as we're done, the national championship game between Alabama and Ohio State here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And we kind of had a sense that something like this was coming down, and it has come down. Key defensive lineman for Ohio State, Tyreek Smith, Tommy Togiai, not available tonight. Their kicker is not available tonight. Kirk Herbstreit had said about an hour ago that Ohio State would be without a couple of huge contributors, and he said, we'll let you know, quote, when we're allowed to talk about it, close quote. Didn't say who they were, but now we know. Their kicker and two of their starting defensive linemen are out for tonight's game because of COVID-type protocols.
Wow, that is huge. Tyreek Smith is such a big part. The good news is, I mean, the Suns game is over. So I don't have to watch the rest. I mean, the Suns are toast. So I can just watch the national championship game without watching the second half of the Suns game.
It's bad news if you're a Suns fan. It's good news if you're you when you're trying to limit how much work you have to do tonight. I don't know if that's good news for Suns fans.
No, the Suns game is done. Like they lost. They don't need to play the second half. The Suns game is OVA over. It is over. They're done.
So now you can just focus on the national championship
in Alabama.
But now I'm worried that with these losses for Ohio State, that game might be OVA over tonight because Alabama was already an 8-point favorite. I've read that in some books, they're already up to a 9.5-point favorite just because of these losses by Ohio State that were just announced about a half hour ago.
Yeah, well, that's – and listen, I mean, there was a lot of talk about whether they're going to play the game on time. We knew they were depleted. We knew they were going to be shorthanded to some degree. With the COVID issues and everything, but they've said all along we're going to play the game. That's two key starters on your defensive line in Togiai and Smith. And you got a key reserve on your offensive line in Jones. You mentioned the kicker is not going to be there. Their backup running back. I mean, they got 13 players who aren't going to be there. I mean, it's, but the two defensive linemen, Tajai and Smith, are huge losses. I mean, Tajai, he's played the most snaps of any interior defensive lineman, the second most of any defensive lineman. He's been, you have 4.5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, 23 tackles. He's a mainstay there. So this is, that's really, really going to hurt Ohio State. I hope you're right. I mean, I hope if they're able to find a way to stay in this game, but it's probably going to be tough.
For Ohio State, they're looking for their first championship in quite a few years, and of course they played a much shorter season than Alabama did. For Alabama, their chance to win their sixth national championship in 12 years, and doing it in a way that we're not accustomed to seeing Alabama doing it. Usually they're all about defense, and they have good defensive players, don't get me wrong, but this Alabama team much more defined by their offense than really any Alabama team that I can remember, whether it's their wide receiver, their running back, their quarterback, Mac Jones, their offensive lineman. I mean, again, Alabama's always good at those positions, but usually they're defined more by their defensive ability than their offense. This is a very different Alabama team that we're seeing in the championship game tonight.
Yeah, Devontae Smith is unreal. He was the most outstanding overall player. You got Mac Jones, who's going to get drafted. The quarterback's been great. Najee Harris, the running back, fantastic. They're just so loaded. And then, you know, I didn't know if Waddle was going to play or not. Has there been any update on Waddle? I mean, he was their best receiver the first few games.
He was out there warming up, according to Twitter.
He had that fractured ankle. I mean, if he plays, they're just loaded. And they've got, it's not like they don't have a bad D. Their defense is still really good. But their offense is just really successful, and because they can beat you so many different ways, running, passing. Jones has done a good job. So it's up, if I'm Ohio State, I mean, Trey Sermon, I mean, he's got the opportunity. He's a great running back. So if he's legit and they can run the ball and keep that Alabama offense off the field, that's what you want to try and do.
That's our Coors Light What's On Tonight, the games we're going to watch this evening. We are out of here. We will see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The championship game is next.
Have a great night, everyone.